You're listening to a University of Kentucky College of Arts and Sciences podcast. I'm Cheyenne Homan. Cynthia Reuter is a professor in the Department of Modern and Classical Languages, Literatures, and Cultures. She teaches Russian language classes and has a particular research interest in the Moscow Canal. Built in the 1930s during Stalin's regime, the canal has a rich history.
My name is Cynthia Reuter. I am a professor here at the University of Kentucky. I teach Russian language courses. I've also taught literature courses and seminars in my research area, which is Stalinist culture and cultural history and the Gulag, the Soviet prison camp system in the 1930s or before World War II. The history of the construction of the Moscow Canal, its architecture and cultural artifacts, demonstrate how Stalinist ideology was inscribed directly onto the landscape.
The Moscow Canal connects to the Volga River.
The Volga River is a little over 100 miles north of Moscow, and so the canal was built in part to tap into that huge water supply in the 1930s to be able to essentially slake the thirst of Moscow and also to allow Moscow to develop in the ways that Stalinist planners wanted it to. They wanted it to become the socialist capital city. And in order to do that, you had to build taller buildings, bigger buildings, you had to increase the population, and you couldn't do that if you were relying on a water source that frequently was not adequate enough to support a larger population and all this construction. And so one of the reasons they built this canal was to provide potable water for Moscow, but also for transportation. I mean, they had railroads, but they were thinking that river transport would also be an economical way to get stuff both into Moscow and from Moscow. And they also constructed what they call a water stadium for water sports, water skiing, and whatever, and a number of reservoirs that served both as repositories for water but also as recreational areas. So there was a three-pronged purpose for constructing this canal. The fact that it was constructed by a forced labor contingent and that this was the only Gulag camp that was actually physically located in and around Moscow is a remarkable thing, because usually they're out in the wilds and as far from populated centers as possible. One of the other interesting things is the notion of how a built environment conveys the ideology of the regime that constructed it. And this is totally apparent with the Moscow Canal. Its architecture is quite impressive. There were sculptures built along the canal to visually entertain people who would sail by on cruises. There were songs composed by Gulag camp inmates about the canal, stories written about it, and also paintings painted that depict various scenes along the canal. And so it ended up being not just this construction site, but a cultural and ideological event. What's ended up happening, I think, is two things. On the one hand, the canal itself is a living, visible reminder of Stalinism. Does that mean that it imbues anyone who views it with Stalinist ideology? Probably not, because the context in which it now survives is very different. That said, there's something to, in general, contextualizing Stalinism and especially the Gulag experience in Russian society. And that's not completely happening. In fact, it's hardly happening at all. So I think that the Moscow Canal ends up representing or becoming a point of contention that illustrates the past that has produced Russian society, but also the present in which Russia is trying to stake out for itself a place as a world power in the 21st century, but still hasn't managed to adequately process what got it there. There's probably a lot more processing, for example, of the concentration camp experience and Nazism in Germany and attempts to come to terms with it, even if people haven't completely come to terms with it, on a much bigger scale than there is in Russia in terms of coming to terms with Stalinism and the Stalinist past and the Gulag experience. It certainly doesn't come into the minds of average Russians that this was a canal that was built by essentially slave labor in the 1930s. They just take it at face value. People who go on cruises on the canal view it as a waterway that gets them to the Volga River and places beyond. I don't think that there's that ideological impetus in people viewing the canal today. Moreover, the current administration of the canal, understandably so, is focusing on how the canal can fulfill 21st century functions. That is, how can it keep providing electricity? How can it keep supplying drinkable water? Because Moscow relies on the Moscow Canal to this day for 60 to 70% of its water. You know, is there a way to exploit the transportation potential? And if not, because there are cheaper ways now to haul goods, is there some way to exploit the canal as a major destination or a recreation area that people can enjoy? And so there's just a different focus. And if anything, during the 70th anniversary of the canal, the Gulag elements in its history were paid lip service, but were pretty much brushed under the rug so as to emphasize how wonderful it is that people work there now and the great work that they're doing, and that they brought the canal through World War II and brought it back up to speed. And to this day, almost 75 years later, it's still functioning. It's a different attitude to it. And I understand that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I absolutely understand it. The Gulag haunts all of Russia each and every day. It's just a matter of whether or not you pay attention to that and whether you trace those influences. And it's not just the Moscow Canal, it's other canals, it's buildings, all sorts of infrastructure, it's remnants of camps that are still in far-flung places. The city of Norilsk, which produces the bulk of the nickel that Russia exports, is a prison camp city. It wouldn't be there had there not been a prison camp. So the Gulag infuses, to this day, so many aspects of Russian life. The question is whether or not people pay attention to that and want to pay attention to that. And the overwhelming response is no, that they don't want to pay attention to it and they don't want to think of it. And there's not a lot of leadership at the top that tries to enable people to come to terms with this difficult period in history. And if anything, the government interferes with attempts to try and make peace or make sense, if that's at all possible, with this chapter, this huge chapter, started with Lenin in 1918 and went all the way to the late 1950s. So, I mean, there's a huge chapter of Soviet and Russian history that has yet to be explored in any kind of public way to make sense of it. And the organization that has done the most to try and bring to light the legacy of the Gulag is Memorial, which has offices in major Russian cities. And those people are to be admired for their willingness to fly in the face of government institutions in their search for the truth.
Thanks for listening. And thanks to the College of Arts and Sciences and the Department of Modern and Classical Languages, Literatures, and Cultures for making this podcast possible. For more information about Memorial, visit www.memo.ru.